Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
But before we get into the show, if you like the SDR show and you want to have amazing sex, we want to tell you about a popular sexual enhancer, the Promescent Delay Spray, that's been used by over a million men and is clinically proven to help you last longer in bed. So it takes the edge off, it lowers the sensitivity, so you don't have to worry about finishing too soon. Just better sex guaranteed, no pesky subscription required. It's easy to use, it helps you last longer, and it gives you more confidence. What more could you ask for? So just go to promescent.com, that's promescent.com. There is not even a promo code, it don't matter. You have a 60-day money-back guarantee. You could feel confident. You can know you last longer. You want to have a little more excitement, look and feel more manly. You go to promescent.com. That's what you should do, and do it now.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR show. This week, it's funny, Big J's not on the show, but I tell you what, I found out after the fact, a huge fan. He would have figured out a way to do the show, but, you know, what are you going to do? But it is a great band. It is Toad the Wet Sprocket. We've been singing Walk on the Ocean all around the studio all week here. Great band. We do this live every Wednesday, every Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern time. And right now, if you use the code SDR, you get 20% off. Also, by the way, if you sign up for 2 years, go to gasdigitalnetwork.com. You can get a really cool limited edition book bag with all the pins of all the shows. Or if you just went back to college recently and you're starting your school year, if you have a .edu email address, you get a 30-day free trial. All that's going on at gasdigitalnetwork.com. But here it is right now, Glenn Phillips of Toad the Wet Sprocket on the SDR show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I beat, it's hocus and blow. It's art, it's far, you need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. I would say now, hands down, the most repeated co-host outside of Big J Okerson. It is James Madden. James, thank you for coming back on.
I'm so honored to be the Jay Leno of this show. It means the world to me. I've been wanting this for a long time. Touchdown, baby.
Well, I'm glad you made it. I was thinking, what's the other comedian? The one who died that I love so much. What the hell was his name? Gary Shandling. That would be a better, I think you're more fitting as a Gary Shandling.
They were first of all, drinks on me next time. One of my heroes. But yeah, they were guest host.
Yeah, but then Jay eventually got the gig. Is this your desire to kick me out of my own show? That's not nice.
No, I'm going to go the Channing route. I'm going to do a podcast that parodies this podcast.
And then you're going to die. Perfect. And Shannon, our producer, is off camera this week. But now let's talk about this band, this dude. Just their ninth album is about to come out. A really big fan for years. The band is Toad the Wet Sprocket. The dude is Glenn Phillips, singer, guitarist. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Thank you.
Oh, okay. That's a nice, very composed background. You always look on backgrounds these days. You can't help it, but it definitely looks like you spend some time to make sure it looks good.
It's a live casty world. I mean, there's a massive pile of shit right off to this side, but
no, it doesn't matter if it's not on camera. It doesn't exist.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I see two guitars and keyboards. Look at you. Look at you. We get it. You're a musician. That's great.
Well, this is also where I actually recorded a big chunk of the Toad record here. We had to do the record mostly via Dropbox from home.
Of Starting Now, the new one. That's how you did it. Wow.
Yeah,
that's great.
Starting Now, the new one. I did a ton of live casts. So, I mean, this has basically been where I've been working.
Oh, I'm hearing a weird...
Yep,
what
I'm sorry. Something started playing on my computer. I apologize.
Oh, okay. I got confused. I thought there was a ghost. Okay. So you know
ghost.
What? I'm going to do this differently. Usually we go back to the beginning and work our way forward, but I think we should start with the new album. It's the first album in 8 years. So I think it's the second longest break the band has taken. And the new album is called Starting Now. I listened through and I have some questions and maybe you can enlighten me.
Sure.
So the first one, which I think we all can agree everybody fucking loves. I've never met anybody that doesn't love this man. How the hell did you get Michael McDonald to come sing on the record?
By great strokes of luck. I've met Michael a number of times over the years. He lives in Santa Barbara. He's been back and forth. I actually also had friends who knew him out in when he was in Nashville. And my friend Chris was producing him. And Dean, the bass player in Toad, I had this idea for this interweaving background part, and he started singing it in Michael McDonald's voice. Like, God, wouldn't it be amazing if Michael McDonald could sing this? And I was like, actually, I kind of know a guy who knows a guy. And so we called Chris, and about 2 months later, he's like, yeah, once we get to the end of the album, we'll try it. And then one day I just get a call from Chris, and all of a sudden there's like four wave files just sitting in the Dropbox.
It's a weird feeling because I have to imagine, you know, as a musician, you've become friends with other musicians over the years. And every once in a while, you may say, hey, wouldn't it be cool if blah, blah, blah sang a little bit or played a little bit? And then you make that call and they might say no. And it probably fucks up your relationship after then. If you ask and they say no, you're taking a chance.
That's been my fear, but I mean, the thing is, I'm so insanely reluctant to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I never want to be the guy who leverages anything. And so anytime I come even close to that, I break out in a cold sweat. And but the good thing is, anytime I've done that, maybe it's just because I'm so terrified of it. Anytime I've actually done it, almost every time people just go, sure, that'd be fun. Nobody That's ever cool. called like, it's a weird thing. Like, you know, Pete Thomas, you know, who drums for Elvis Costello and the Attractions.
Thank you for air drumming, or else we wouldn't have known what you meant when you said that. Thank you.
Yes, Pete Thomas drums. Yes. Pete Thomas, you know, he complains about not getting enough work because, you know, I don't know if he complains actively, but he has in the past complained to me, like saying that people are afraid to call him. They think he's busy. They think he's above their pay grade or whatever. And so he doesn't get the calls. And that guy just, even when he's sitting in the studio between takes, he's like, he just wants to beat. He's like animal. All he wants to do is bang on the drums. And every second that he's not playing is like a second wasted. And he would just be in the studio every day if he could. It's his favorite thing to do is drum. And he's like, why doesn't everybody call me? I just want to play. And
I think Todd Rundgren wrote a song about him.
Yes.
It's a brief joke. It's a little joke there. It's a musical joke for everybody. James, in the comedy world, do you ask people to ever like collaborate? Like, let's say you got to write a set, or you're doing roast jokes, or you're going to do a set somewhere high profile. Is it common or uncommon to like ask comedian friends, help me punch this up? Would you work with me on this?
If you're doing a roast, it's all hands on deck, whether the other person's coming or not. It's I need to come up with something. You're throwing me any joke with that fits. Yeah. Okay, other stuff, kind of leave your opinions to yourself, to be honest. Sometimes people are like, hey, I know how to fix this. And it's fucking the worst punchline you've ever heard. And now you feel like a bad friend if you don't add it. It's like, hey, I got a tag for you. And it's like, I don't know how to tell you that this is just drizzling shit.
Well, that leads me to a good question. What if Michael McDonald was off tune or something was off with the lyric? Would you have told him, or you just would have just not used it, or what?
Well, the easy thing, like comedians don't have auto timing or auto laugh. You can always just nudge a vocal a hair.
Oh, that makes sense. That's the world we live in these days.
But you can't make a bad line funny.
I'm going to invent audio punchline, auto punchline.
That was on a South Park episode, the Funny Bot. They did that where it created punchlines.
God damn it.
Or the Funny Bot, or you just add a laugh track. And,
yeah, either or.
And like everybody assumes it's funny.
So there's one song on the record. This is the whole record a few times. And this, the first single, I think, was the title track. But there's a song that almost sounds like it's from a different record, but it might be my favorite song on the record. It's so different, called Dual Citizenship.
Mm.
Can you give me a little background on it? Because it does, you have to admit, it sounds like maybe it was from another project or something, because it definitely sounds almost dancey. I don't know what you'd say about it, but it has like a drum beat, and you know, it's a very different vibe.
Yeah, that's actually one that I did start by myself, like in Logic on my computer. It started with a drum machine and the guitar loop, and got kind of built into being more of a band song. Everything else was tracked, you know, together, starting as the band. We had like 2 days of tracking in February 2020, and then everything got shut down.
Yeah, well, that's the world we live in. Yeah.
So that actually was different and was kind of built up from that and brought back into the band. And so you're not wrong.
Well, I seldom am, Glenn. Seldom am I ever.
You and Brett Weinstein, good luck.
It's interesting that, the three of you, you, Todd and Dean, really together since you're kids. We'll go back. You started out in high school together, and that's how the band formed. You were all children, for the lack of better words, right?
Yeah, and they met, I think Dean, not Dean, Randy and Todd, our original drummer, they met in I think they were five at, St. Mark's Methodist. They met mm-hmm. Dean in junior high. Everybody's known each other for a long time. And yeah. I was a freshman in high school. They were all seniors. So we have both some shorthand and some really, some good interpersonal and some really bad interpersonal.
Well, evident by the time that you took several years away from each other. But what leads me to that is an interesting thing is that, I don't know, James, if you feel this way, but you listen to bands, because I think you might be slightly younger than me. I'm 51. I think you're 50 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So you hear a band on the radio when I'm, I guess, 20, 21, when Fear came out. That's when I first was aware of you guys. And you are just envisioned that the guy's older than you. I don't know why that is. I don't think of a rock band where the guy's two or three years younger than me. So I'm 20, 21 when I first hear them, and you're 18. That's fucking weird. You had to be so young to be in a big rock band. That seems like a lot to take in at that age.
It messed me up a little. Yeah.
Fair enough.
A lot of imposter syndrome. And by the time I think I would do a better job of it now. At the time, there was probably a lot of self-sabotage involved.
It's crazy because you were all just basically kids. And then what I heard, which I don't know who had the business acumen for this, but around your second record, you were offered a $1 million deal, right? The classic, you always used to hear that, $1 million record mm-hmm. deals. Somebody had the wherewithal to realize, oh, they don't give you $1 million, like your hands off, here's $1 million. That has to get paid back to the label. You've heard that story a million times over the years. Yeah. Somebody on your team, I don't know if it was you or who, was like, oh, no, we shouldn't do this. This is not good for us. Who was the one that figured that out?
Our manager, Chris Blake. He was, we wanted to be affordable for the label. We wanted to have creative control, and we got all those things. And actually, our relationship with Columbia was up until we took a large advance. We'd had two platinum albums. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we saw a check until we'd sold over 1.5 million records.
Jesus.
Unbelievable.
That was in the days of $300,000 videos, right? You couldn't just take out your iPhone and shoot a video. And so so much money got spent on the promotion of those things it was sold 1.5 million before we saw a dime, and we were cheap. We were paying for ourselves on the road. Right. We, didn't take big advances. So when we took a big advance, the relationship with the company changed entirely. And all of a sudden there was that pressure that we hadn't had. It didn't help at the end of the day.
I heard a story years ago. It may not be true to this day, but let's say 10 years ago, Motley Crue still owed money for merch sales that never happened to the label. So they were still in back pay to the label because they printed up a certain amount of merch that did not sell, and they owed the label, which is crazy. It's like, how the fuck does that even happen? But apparently it happens a lot.
It's a bit of a racket.
And what I like, I say this every time I bring someone on, but I try and do my research and understand a band a little better. What I liked was that Columbia wanted you to re-record your second record, Pale, and you guys like, no, we like it the way it is. We'll record a new record, but this one we want to stay how it is. That couldn't have been an easy deal to bargain with when you're 18, 19 years old.
Yeah, we had the first two records done. It was, and they were, I think, at a place, they didn't ask us to re-record. Other labels were asking. I think Geffen wanted us to re-record and make a big debut. And we're like, we just wanted to go on the road. We wanted to learn how to tour, learn how to play. We wanted to get our tour legs on, and we wanted to just move forward. And Columbia at that time was, I think, wanting to prove that they were doing capable of doing artist development. Mm-hmm. And we were like there at the right time, and they actually put their money where their mouth was. I mean, it was a great time to be on that label. We had a rep. Every town we would go to, there would be a college rep, a retail rep, and a radio rep.
Wow.
And they worked us ragged. Every single town we went to, like, we worked so damn hard. And they had the infrastructure to actually make it happen, which was really cool.
And in many ways, that's why the band was able to survive over those years, because you were such road dogs and you built up a following locally everywhere you played that you could still go out and fill venues. Nowadays, they don't really let artists break on their third record. That doesn't happen anymore. So it's nice that you had that ability to do that.
Yeah, we were really lucky. Our timing in many ways, even getting on the radio, like, I don't think All I Want, Walk on the Ocean, you know, they were, it was kind of right after deregulation and kind of pre-Clear Channel when, mm-hmm. you know, they weren't even calling it alternative music, right? They were saying it's like postmodern. Modern rock. They didn't know what it was. And so we were getting played on like four formats because radio was in this really open state, and we just had incredibly fortunate timing.
Yeah, it was also a beautiful time in that MTV was playing music, so songs could break on television or they could break on radio. Radio was still trying to understand what it was in terms of what format was what, so it allowed probably the last time for such a diverse amount of music to be heard by the masses. I don't think it's now, you have to seek it out. You know, there's probably more diverse music now, but you have to seek it out. Where there, you could just turn on MTV or turn on Z100 and hear a crazy array of music from rap to rock to various forms of pop and whatnot. That doesn't exist anymore, really.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, less of it out there. So it was easier to have some visibility, and people bought music. They would buy a cassette for their car and a CD for home. And if they still had a record player, weren't smart enough to hold on to it forever. You know, if they still had a record player, they may buy an LP. So at that time as well, the companies were sitting on this huge well of cash because people were buying multiple formats and multiple copies of multiple formats. And now nobody buys anything. You know, it's like, and so, you know, music sales, it's like we're selling CDs, our only physical product. You know, it takes 6 months to order vinyl because vinyl is this, you know, all the factories shut down and then had to reopen when vinyl got cool again. And meanwhile, we're selling CDs, which, you know, thank God our audience is in their, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, because they're the only people that even still have anything they can play a CD on. but, you know, it's crazy. We're selling obsolete technology. And that's, you know, and other than that, there's kind of nothing but tickets.
Yeah, I mean, so. I guess, James, you have a question?
No, I'm just going to say, I've never been more relaxed than a podcast. Glenn, you're the smoothest dude. Your shirt, no one has worn such a nice shirt with a good combination of a hair comb and the background. I just want to say that I'm kind of just hanging in the, and you got a telly in your lap the whole goddamn time? Like a Bond villain with a cat? This is unbelievable. I've never been more relaxed.
Well, I can tell you, but listening to
you talk all day. I want
listening
you
to Glenn a lot lately, James. He is definitely a man who's a strong advocate of self-help and mental wellness. I've heard a lot of that stuff. So you're picking up on the vibes, James.
Yes. Can you Zoom about 2 a.m. so I can fall asleep after my show tonight? Just talk for 20 minutes. I'll Venmo you, or I'll send you a physical copy of something. Yeah. Whatever you do, Glenn. Maybe I need you do my goddamn line.
He could do some ASMR podcasts, maybe that.
Please.
I hope you're all feeling very relaxed.
Yeah, he's out.
I did put on a better shirt. I was wearing a spaghetti stained one earlier this morning.
Well, I'm just wearing a shitty t-shirt. You make me feel terrible. Thank you.
And I'm packing for tour, and I don't pack white on tour because you can't wash it on the road. So this one's staying home.
I don't pack white.
I could have used you as a father.
So really, like I want to hit a couple other things. I know you're going to perform for us as well. So the name, which I'm not telling any secrets here, was characterized or listed several times on like one of the worst band names of all time, right? That we know.
It's
well established. And it came from a Monty Python sketch. And it was a Monty Python sketch of the worst possible band name of all time.
Exactly. We knew what we were doing.
But you didn't expect to keep it, I would imagine.
No, we didn't. We had our first gig, but we didn't have a name, and we wanted something seriously cool and edgy and awesome and alternative. And then we like debated for a year and we couldn't think of anything. And by that time, like, you know, 20 people were coming to see us. We can't lose our fan base.
So. You ever think about, you know, making it a little hipper and going by like T2WS? Sounds a little more fancy.
Like a T squared thing in there.
Yeah, T squared WS. Why not? Right? You can do it. All right. And
we've been emphasizing the toad above all else. Not that toad is cool, but at least it's better than Stone the West Sprocket.
What I loved hearing was that Eric Idle, who obviously is from Monty Python, was driving in his car, heard a song on the radio, and they said that was Toad the West Sprocket, and he almost crashed his car because he couldn't believe someone actually had that name. Did you ever get to meet anyone from Monty Python and talk about it?
Yes, but only briefly. And I'm feeling like an idiot. He lives in Santa Barbara, and I'm completely blanking on his name because I'm a fool.
Terry Gilliam?
Mostly headless. Yeah, no, not Terry. God, I would die to meet Terry Gilliam. But no.
Michael Palin?
Not Michael Palin.
We're running out of options here.
Nearly headless Nick. I hate remembering him for that Ministry of Civil War.
John Cleese?
John Cleese, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You get extra points today. But John Cleese, I've met in person, and he was wonderful. And he said, oh, yes, you have that name. he was mildly amused by it.
It would have been cool if you killed Eric Idle by naming it and he actually went off the road. That would have been a great story.
That would have been great. The weirdest thing about it is there is it's called like Masters of Metal, which was, I want to say, in early 80s or late. There is an album of like kind of hard rock from Northern England. It's mm-hmm. and there is a Toad the Wet Sprocket, and they have, it's like Blues in B. It's like a nothing bomb of a song, but there actually was another band that
took the name, really?
That took the name very briefly, and they recorded like one song ever.
So before you, after you, during you?
Way before us, like decades. A decade.
Oh,
before.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
I always wanted to do a punk cover band where all we did was Monty Python songs, and we were going to be called the Dead Parrots.
Nice.
It's a good fucking band, no? The Dead Parrots? Come on, Ralph, you're in.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in.
First
I can
album,
play
Norwegian Bloom.
Dude, come on. We're going to do Brighter Side of Light. I'll speed it up.
All right, before we go any further, this is going to the auto mechanics, the super cool do-it-yourself guys, or the dudes that work on their own cars. I am talking to you. I want to tell you all about rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best possible prices, the one-stop shop for everything auto parts. They've been in business for 20 years and then some. It's rockauto.com. They are just known for the world's best prices. No more hunting through stores, looking for things you can't find. A guy goes in the back for 20 minutes, comes out and says they don't have it, or he brings the wrong thing. Or maybe you just want to peruse. Maybe you're a car guy. You want to take a look, find things that inspire you, maybe for your own car. You never know. Go to rockauto.com. How confident are they about their incredible pricing? There is no discount code. Just go to rockauto.com. Buy what you need. You know they're going to have it. But tell them you heard about them on the SDR show, and that would be good for us. All right, let's get back into it. Moving to the album that broke you guys, obviously, was Fear. And one, I mean, I'm not telling anyone. I'm sure everyone knows, you know, the two songs you said, the biggest two, All I Want and Walk on the Ocean. Walk on the Ocean, to me, you know, always felt it was such a unique song because they never really knew what it meant. It was like such creative lyrics. And then when I do my research and see, oh, it doesn't mean anything, was very disappointing.
I dialed it in a lot more when I was young. I mean, I feel like there was. It's interesting. I have tried to become much more direct with lyrics, and sometimes I it may be a little too like Howard Jones self-helpy, but it's yeah. There was a certain amount. I mean, the thing with that record, Todd had the music. And he had the melody, and we didn't have any lyrics, and we were at our rehearsal studio recording a demo of it, and they were like, can you just write something, like, let's make a vocal, I want to mix it down and take a version home, like, just write something. And I had just been kind of for my honeymoon, I'd been with my wife to this place called Dobay on Orcas Island. Mm-hmm. It's this kind of, you know, hippie resort where you can like go tent out, but they have these sulfur springs that look over the ocean. And so, so Washington State, you know, hippie vacay. And I'd just been back from that. And I was vaguely thinking of that, walk on the ocean, step on the stone. I have no idea what that it's gobbledygook. And, but I wrote the whole thing in about 15 minutes and just wrote three verses, wrote the chorus and sang it. And then I was going to write a real lyric later. It was a total, it was like the band name. It was a stand-in for something that we really should have considered more seriously.
I love it.
And it just ended up working. It feels
But meanwhile,
right.
For 30 years, I'm trying to turn my wood into bone like an asshole, and there's no such thing. So
one cannot. I mean, it, you know, things do ossify. You know.
I guess that's true. But yeah. And also the other one, which is interesting, is the other big hit on the record, All I Want, almost didn't make the record.
Yeah, it was too pop. We thought we were, a college band. When we got together, I was more of like, I was listening to a lot of Ozzy and Rush, Iron Maiden. That was kind of my scene. And right, Todd,
you're speaking my language, sir.
Todd and Dean and the other guys. We were in theater together and choir together. And Todd had a station wagon. He had like a woody, you know, wood-sided station wagon. And I had to bike to school. It wasn't that far, but I was lazy. And so he had a car that I could throw my bike in the back of. And I found out he lived two blocks away from me. And so I'd go to his house, and then we started like listening to music together. And he turned me on to The Replacements. Mm-hmm. He turned me on to Husker Du.
The best.
He turned me on to Dinosaur Jr., Dump Truck, and Elvis Costello. That was actually more Randy, our drummer, U2. And so he turned me on to all this different music. I was listening to nothing like that before. And so I remember hearing like Let It Be by The Replacements and hearing Unsatisfied. My world just exploded. I mean, that album changed my life.
I was going to say, nothing sounds as metal as we were in choir together.
Yes, I know. Well, you know,
and theater.
You know, metal is opera. My brother pointed this out. Metal is opera. It's people doing incredibly dramatic music in very high voices with a large leaning towards virtuosity. Right.
True. So, and also the guitarist. What if I learned anything? What movie was that where he won the deal with the devil by playing classical guitar at
Crossroads?
Crossroads. Yeah, that's metal. You know, classical music. Yngwie Malmsteen, all that shit, kind of brought classical
Randy
music
Rhodes,
to metal.
Man.
Randy Rhodes, all that shit. Yeah. So I agree with you. And it is theatrical as all hell. So theater hand in hand with metal as well. So I'm on board. I just wanted to make the dumb joke. So I agree with you, though, Glenn.
You got it. Anyway, but yeah, Todd turned me on to REM. I mean, who, you know, huge early, you know, enough of an early influence that we denied it vehemently in the press. We don't sound exactly like REM. We did sound exactly
So now the question is, after the I think it's the fifth record, Coil, which was the highest charting record of the band's career, you did the very smart thing to take a 12-year break or something like that. So what was it, just that the band got to a point where you couldn't work together anymore? Like you were too much tension?
A 12-year break? No, Coil was our last.
I know. After Coil, the next record, the next was 97 to what? 2011 is when you re-recorded all the songs. So that's 13 years, 14 years, whatever that is, maybe. So Coil's the best record of your career. What do we do? Let's take a crazy long break.
We broke up. What we should have done is go to therapy as a band. We should have had a mediator. I probably should have gone and done a solo record, and everybody should have done other projects, and we should have come back together. Instead, we tried to do another record, and we had no juice left. Nobody wanted to hang out. Nobody was having a good time. I think, and I think we took it for granted that we could all move on from the band and just, you know, well, I write great songs. I'll get another record deal. Nobody wanted to sign me. I couldn't get a record deal. None of us could. And so I would say and this is where we were possibly not so well managed, was we didn't get sat down and like smacked in the face and told you can't actually ever walk away from something like this and expect to move on or come back. Like, don't be a fucking idiot. I think there was just an arrogance and an inability to communicate. And, I would say now it was a really, you can't take it back. You know, regret gets you nowhere, but I'd say it was a big mistake in all honesty.
Because there's something about it. Like, we've had other people on this show where this kind of story comes up, which is if something happened relatively easily, relatively early on in your life, you were 18, I think. And then you just start a band. You just, that's just what happens. I'll just get another record deal. Big deal. That's what I did last time. And then you realize, 30 years later, it's not the same world that it was. And I'm not going to just get another record deal.
And that statistically what happened to us never happens. And especially for a band that, when I was 16, I had a theater teacher who, explained that the reason he was a theater teacher was he loved the theater more than anything else. And all his friends were going to New York and LA. And he realized he wanted to be in the theater, but he didn't want to always be competing and selling himself. And he knew he didn't have the thick skin for that. And I remember as a kid going like, I'm going to be an arts teacher at a high school. Like, I don't want to do that. That would destroy my soul. Like, if I were being judged and like people were giving me bad reviews and like I couldn't handle it. And I knew that as a kid. And so even as a band, we didn't try to get signed even. Like, we got signed totally sideways. We'd recorded a record because a friend needed a backing band. And he's like, hey, if you record for me, then you can record two of your own songs. And we're like, that was easy. And we recorded eight more songs, and it's cost us like, I think it was $600 or something to record our first album. And so we had no ambition, and I was going to go and up and study like education and theater up in San Francisco. And I had no interest in being a rock star. And then we got signed despite every, like, nobody gets in that position without trying to. And then we got signed, and then I was like, okay, this is the last 2 years. Everyone gets dropped and I'll have a story. And then instead we had a hit. And so there's nobody who gets in that position who it's not the only thing they want in life.
Right.
Like, you're not supposed to get there if you don't want it. And actually, Donny Einer, the head of the company, he couldn't understand me because I was the only singer he'd ever met who didn't want to be a star. And I would sabotage shit constantly because I didn't feel right being out there. And so it really messed us up.
That's pretty
messed
wild.
Me up. I mean, I think Todd always wanted to be in a band and wanted to do well. So did Dean. But it freaked me out. I had full imposter syndrome the whole time.
That's really wild. This is great. I mean, falling ass backwards into a 30-year career in music is pretty wild.
Yeah, I'm starting to get used to it now that it's slipping away.
Wow.
That's really crazy. And then, which I've heard this story now a few times also, in 2011, the band actually got back together just to re-record the big songs for licensing deals more than anything else, right? That was the idea for that.
Yeah. Business move.
Business move, because we had the guys from the singer of Weedus on, and he had to re-record his album because Sony lost the masters. And they got the band back together and re-recorded everything. It sounds almost exactly like the one from 20 years ago, which is pretty wild. And he's also said the same thing for licensing, for getting it in movies and whatnot. Because you guys were, at one point, licensed out the Ying Yang. You were in the Doogie Howser episodes. You're in everything for a while.
Oh, I mean, Sony was so good at getting stuff placed. Sony was amazing. And even and currently, the old songs, if somebody's doing, movie, I'm really enjoying being part of pop culture now and seeing things. I was on a plane recently, I got on a plane. That was wild. But I saw, what's the movie? Tag. And was like, oh my God, there's a Dulcinea poster in the basement. Like, that's so awesome. Like,
that's cool. I mean,
we come up in places like that now, but it's, it's interesting, like getting new stuff licensed is we haven't had a single placement of any new song yet. So if there are any music supervisors listening, for the sake of my children,
did the 2011 re-recording record, any of those songs get licensed or none of those either?
Totally. No, the point of that was we had the publishing back, and because we'd regained our publishing rights, we wanted to give music supervisors an opportunity to do a one-stop shop, right? If they can make one call instead of two, it's much easier for them than having to deal with Sony, having to deal with that. You know, it's like having all the middlemen. And a lot of the time in that world, it's like, hey, we're cutting this episode, and actually, we need you to make a decision and get this license cleared in 2 hours.
Right.
We were trying to get Ray LaMontagne, couldn't afford him. So, you know, can you guys do it?
So it has happened a few times.
Oh, it has happened. Okay, yeah, totally. Cool. It's been completely worth it.
Which I find fascinating. Then you guys decide in 2013, I guess after re-recording that, you felt like we don't hate each other anymore, and you're going to put out a new record, and you do New Constellation, but you do it crowdfunded. You wanted to raise 50 grand. You raised 250 grand. What do you do with the other 200? Do you put it in each other's pockets? Do you say, we're going to change the production of the album? What do you do in that scenario?
We refunded ourselves for the recording of the record, and we spent it all on promotion. We spent it all on the record,
Seemed like a nice person, Glenn Phillips.
This guy's the best. Glenn, if you want a side hustle, I would really think you what I've been missing in my life and my career as a manager. Everything you say is the smartest thing I've ever heard anyone say on this podcast. One phone call. Let me button up my shirt a little more. I mean, this is the greatest, most put together guest ever on the show.
Smartest advice I would give anybody is to never manage a comedian.
That hurts, Glenn.
Sorry.
Glenn, I don't want you to talk me to sleep anymore. I just can't. Now you sound like a relative. I can't do this anymore. Next girlfriend.
No, it's fine. I don't have a manager. So like, no, you know, it's the weird thing. There's this level at which like 10% of that, 15% of that is not worth my time. Like meaning my career for any music manager outside of, you know, Toad has a manager. I don't have a manager. It's a hard world. Entertainment, if you're not big, you are. It's the most blue collar job.
Well, thank God I'm huge. That's all I'm going to say. Thank God I'm super big right now.
Thank God you're huge. You do work for a company though.
No, not really. But I don't.
Oh, you're not salary. Indie now.
Yeah, we're a podcast, so yeah, it's all independent. Oh. I own the network we're on. So, you know, we're on a network, but I own the network.
So we're huge. So you're the CEO.
I am the CEO and the host of one of the most popular shows on the network. So that's how it works.
Well, and does this mean Jamie is COO? What?
James is allowed to speak when I tell him, and
CFO?
That's it. That's all he gets.
I'm like the third guitarist in Bad Religion. When they need one, I come in.
That's about it.
But do you have equity? Do you have ownership if it takes off?
He does
then
not.
I'll totally manage you.
So, Glenn, I don't even have equity in this apartment. Let's be fucking honest over here.
I want to hit a couple other quick things. Am I right that you actually climbed to the top of Mount Kilimanjaro?
Yeah. Well, I walked.
Well, still, I mean, that's fucking amazing. It's 20,000 feet up. I mean, how long did that take? And what made you do that?
Oh, we did it in 8 days. So we took the longest route you can do because it gives you the best chance of finishing. Like, it's not a technical climb. Mm-hmm. There's one day where it's called the Barranca Wall, and that's hard. The rest of it, like, it's really a mental game. You're fighting altitude, not terrain. And the weather was actually really great when we were up there. So I did it because of my friend Tom Cole. He was turning 50, and he's worked in Africa. Mostly he teaches displaced people. He does food security work. So right now he's working with refugee camps of Sudanese people mostly, and helping to basically design how to teach them to do their own farming, how to make their own farming plots work better, do better micronutrition. He's an amazing guy. And he speaks Swahili and Portuguese because he used to work, you know, he's in Mozambique. And so he wanted to climb Kilimanjaro since he was 18, and he was going to school in Kenya. And He was going to go there with his brother. His brother passed away a few years ago. And his wife was like, if you don't do it for your 50th, you're not going to do it. And she actually put together a group of friends. There were eight of us.
Oh, that's cool.
And hiked up with him. And like, it was worth it, honestly, to see his face at the top. Like, it was his dream to do that. It was a dream to do that for his brother. Like, it was one of the most beautiful things I ever saw, was like him at the summit.
And so, I'm glad that along that story, you explained what food security meant, because I first thought maybe like a tomato needs a bouncer. I didn't know what was happening. And then you explained what food security, because I've never heard that term before. So I get it.
Yeah.
To give people security in food. I get it now.
It also works. It's for things like, he used to work for Save the Children for a long time. And so, if you have USAID, you know, giving a bunch of grain, you know, they'll give wheat to people who don't eat wheat, for instance.
Oh, right.
And so you actually have to turn that into a commodity that you can then bring into a market that'll help these displaced people eat. But you also don't want to put the local farmers out of business by flooding the market with, you know, and so it's this like really complicated and nuanced way of trying to make sure you get people food while not also like screwing over farmers or making them totally dependent on foreign aid.
James, Glenn is a way better person than either of us.
Glenn, yes, but Glenn, you
My
also
friends
should
are
let,
better people.
Glenn, you shouldn't let Ralph get away with a tomato needs a bouncer. I mean, that's unexcusable, but I love it at the same time.
It was so stupid that I had to say it. That's why.
But I love it at the
it
same
was
time.
So stupid. I could see Shannon rolling her eyes with her camera off. That's how much I wanted to say
tomato
it.
Tomato with a bouncer.
Food security.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
All right, I have a few other questions, but why don't we get a song in first? What are you doing? Something new, something old? What are you doing?
I could do something new. I was going to do.
Can you ad lib a song called Tomato with a Bouncer? Let's just run with this shit.
Shannon, James and I should mute ourselves, right?
Yes.
James, mute yourself. I like it already.
How about Lantern Light? It's kind of a lovey dovey song, but it sounds nice with the electric over there. Lives are full. Just for tonight, could we take it slow? Turn the breakers off. There's no electric glow. Naked as the night sky laid out on the floor. In the lantern light, the flicker of the flame, you have never been so beautiful. I wouldn't change a thing. Thanks for every day. Came home to you. Came home to you. Well, I can be stubborn. Hard. Nothing to forgive, it's just the way we are. And all we ever wanted was something no one's ever had. Just to never hurt the ones we love again. But in the lantern light, the flame, you have never been so beautiful. I wouldn't change a thing. Thanks for every day. I came home to you. Don't you hide those scars of every little wound that made you who you are. And in the lantern light,
never been so beautiful, so beautiful. Yes, we both know you're the stronger one. Yes, we both hope this isn't overdone. And in the lantern light, the flicker of the flame, you have never been so beautiful. I wouldn't change a thing. Thanks for every day I came home to you. Don't you hide those scars of every little wound that made you who you are. And in the lantern light, the flicker of the flame, you have never been so beautiful, so beautiful.
You know, I feel like I should be sipping an Aperol spritz on a beach somewhere. It's just such a relaxing, cool song. It's a great vibe. It's really cool. Thank you very much for playing that. The new album is called Starting Now, the ninth album by Toad the Wet Sprocket. Let's go through a couple other quick things before we wrap up the show here. Number one, the story I heard online is that in 2008, you fell off a table and fucked up your arm and almost lost the ability to play guitar. Is that right?
That is true.
How long did it take to get your arm back to normal?
It's not. So it's my left arm. The ulnar nerve is cut at the elbow. And so I have basically constant pins and needles through my pinky and half of this finger. It's basically like I've always just whacked my funny bone.
Oh, no.
And I can't close, like I can close the fingers on this. I can go like that, but I can't actually, this is paralyzed.
So, wow.
Yeah. So I just had to learn. I was asking for, it's one of those, be careful what you ask for. I was told a girl I dated for a while said, anytime you ask the universe for anything, you should always add with benefit to all and harm to none. Because I was specifically like, I want to play music with other people more. I want to collaborate more. And I want a new challenge. And so I got a new challenge, and I had to relearn to play guitar from the ground up. And I only started using my pinky at all. It doesn't have proprioception. That's like how you can tell where your body is in space.
Uh-huh.
So I've had to like retrain myself.
Wow,
because
that's really
it
wild.
Feels like twice as large as it is.
It's a lot more milder story of the Def Leppard drummer. Just kind of had to relearn how to play.
It's way more mild, except in a similar way. Whether it was my friends who went out on the road with me when I couldn't play and accompanied me, or whether it was Toad, actually for the doing that record, the New Constellation record, like they were so great about helping me to heal my hand, taking over parts I couldn't play anymore.
Wow.
Changing the keys of songs so I could do the chord. There's a few chord shapes I could do, and like it was great, just encouraging me to keep playing and taking slack when I couldn't handle parts. And
so did it change the way you write songs now, because you're writing within the new ability of your playability?
Yeah, there's certain shapes I can't do, but it also taught me a lot about guitar. I mean, there's a thing in rock music where you're always just strumming, especially me, I'm the rhythm guitarist, so it's like you're always using all six strings. And mm-hmm. then started noticing, jazz players, they're hitting three notes, or just intervals. And there's a lot you can get away with in terms of voicing less and saying just as much or even more. And so learning how to play more economically.
That's wild.
Yeah.
And then here, I read this, and I don't know how I feel about this. So I work on another show. It's about health and wellness. And you said you believe all your vices are like finite, and or your energy, so to speak. And like, for instance, the example I saw was that if you drink coffee, sure, you're going to have energy now, but you're taking away the energy you might have had later. And in the same thing with alcohol, you drink alcohol, you might get happy now, but you're taking away from the happy load that might have been in the future. I don't think I agree with that. To think that your vibes are finite, you know, it seems a little saddened to think you only have a fixed amount of happiness in your life. And if you're feeling it now, you're not going to feel it later. That seems a little morbid.
I don't think it's fixed. This was a friend of mine, Peter Ashway, was telling me about this. And I liked his description of that, because he was saying, you know, it's like, okay, caffeine's taking away, you know, this afternoon's energy, right? You're spending this afternoon's energy now. It's not that it's finite. It's not that you can't rebuild that energy later. Mm-hmm. It's not that you don't have new energy the next day. The one that it was the most important for me was understanding my relationship with alcohol, because, you only have so much serotonin, right? and you got to replenish it. And, I don't drink to excess. I'm not like the guy who's going to be caught like upside down in a river somewhere, like having crashed his car with, you know, I don't wake up next to strange people in the morning. But what happens is when I drink, I end up drinking regularly. I start drinking every now and then, and then I end up drinking a few beers every day. And that's enough to usually send me into a deep depression after a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. I struggle with depression. And so like, I have to actually watch my serotonin levels. And
right.
His description of it was more like, you know, your happiness, like you can be really full up. And like a lot of people, if you have a good, you know, serotonin levels, you can kind of tamp it down and it refills really quickly. With me, if I go in every day, the tank just gets lower and lower until it's empty, and I don't have to get shit faced for that to happen.
Right.
And so I can bottom out just by drinking, you know, 5 days in a row. Having two beers.
Well, that seems like a lot, though. I mean, I think in general, and I've always believed anybody that's doing any mind altering substance every day, that is, there's an issue or a problem that you're not dealing with. And that's just helping you avoid whatever that problem is.
Absolutely. And then it comes back in full force. And like, it comes back with the force of every day that you tamped it down. Right. And so for me, it's not like, you know, happiness is finite, but it's more like that helped me understand my relationship with alcohol and be able to have like an attitude that like, if I drink, I have to drink not regularly. Right. And I have to do it really carefully, because my happiness is way more important than that hour or two of happiness I get when I drink.
All right. I'm on board with it. Yeah. Okay. I'll allow it. And then also, it's funny, although I sort of have a tattoo, which I've told on the show a few times, not really, but you said in an interview that you have no alterations or tattoos at all, except your snipped schwanz, just like a good Jew as myself as well.
Yes, that's not true anymore.
Oh, well, now you got a tattoo. Wow, that wasn't in one of the interviews. When did that get done?
That was like 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You said in an interview you would never get a tattoo that didn't be something you wanted for the rest of your life. So what is that, and why is that one so important?
Well, I have three now.
shit. Okay.
I have the first one I got was kind of typical. It's the pulsar map from the Voyager, which is, you know, how to find Earth, basically.
In case you get abducted.
For an alien. In case I get abducted. But it's more, I mean, it's more for my father and more for me to also remember how tiny this planet is and how lucky I am to actually be alive and sentient and not to waste a second.
I say it again, you're a better man than me. Continue.
Unbelievable.
This is my daughter's. So it's, you know, two earth signs, one water sign. So they're always with me there. And they're kind of an arrow of action, you know, with the right hand. And this one is healing. So it's partially about this and partially just about like, trying to you know, bring spiritual energy into action, into good works in the world, and like reminding myself I'm here for a reason. And these all came, you know, after I was divorced. And I had to.
Did you start banging like a real hippie chick who got you into all this, or what? Like, how did that come about?
I am so bad at casual sex. I can't do it. Oh, yeah. I I didn't. I can't really do that.
I mean, for the sniz, I'll start believing there's a flat earth. You understand what I'm saying?
Boy, that was a hot take, Ralph. Can I just say this, Glenn? After you, and I, most of my tattoos mean something. After yours, I realized I was just going to get just wind baby right here. You talked me out of it without talking me out of it based on that. I just thank you for that.
Nah, you got to do it. My girls are totally, actually, my oldest doesn't have any tattoos. My youngest too, like they have that kind of millennial, like they just, you know, like they put on tattoos like you put stickers on a binder, you know, if it's
I think
cute,
now it's
fun.
More unique to not have any. That's why I think I'm more unique. I sort of have one, but not really.
You're the unicorn, Ralph.
Yeah, I am. And for so many reasons. So my last two questions, and then we'll do the plugs around the neighborhood here. This is a fascinating story. You got to work with John Paul Jones of Led Zeppelin when you toured with Nickel Creek. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah.
And how fun, how awe-inspiring was that? It had to be amazing.
It was amazing. I felt really unworthy because I'm not a huge enough. I love Led Zeppelin, but I am not enough of like there's no way I deserve that experience. he is a big mandolin player. He's like, the thing I love about him, Robert Plant too, those guys are lifelong learners. You know, there's nothing about them that is happy to just regurgitate the past and live
right
there.
Or else they would have reunited 20 years ago at this point. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You know, Robert Plant's like, I'm on tour. I'm doing a thing with Alison Krauss. I got this, you know. And John Paul Jones is a brilliant musician and such an amazing guy. He met Nickel Creek because he's a mandolin player and he was a Chris Thiele fan. He met them at Merle Fest and said, if you ever want me to play on anything, please give me a call. And we had this tour and we're like, we need a bass player. And we're like, should we call it? He said, like, really? Do you think?
That's so crazy.
No. I mean, this is why we had this long debate. Like, you know, even when there's an invitation, right?
Right.
Back to the earlier subject of even when somebody's, please, I'd love to. And so we're like, you want to go on tour with us for a month? And he did. And he came out. He's like, he'd only been in a bus like once before. Like he said, yeah, usually we travel by plane. And I have this picture of him because, you know, we had no money. We were staying in the frickin' Holiday Inn. And it's like him outside the bus looking at a Holiday Inn sign. Like, why on earth did I say yes to this?
I could buy this Holiday Inn. What the fuck am I doing?
And he never even, and I've been on tour with other people like that where they just upgrade. They say, I'm going to go to the Four Seasons. I'll see you guys tomorrow. And he would just stay at the Holiday Inn. And
so cool.
He was amazing. He was so fun to work with, such a brilliant musician. And so, you know, we stop in New York City and I'm the only guy on tour who doesn't read music. And I'm like, oh, there's a sheet music store back there. I don't know. I know you guys like looking at things. And so Nickel Creek and him, they come back with piles of like concertos, sonatas, things to practice. And they're just handing like all these Bach pieces back and forth and analyzing them together. And, you know, every night was just, he told a couple of war stories. I mean, we started the tour in Seattle. So he told us, you know, about the sharks in the bathtub and all that stuff. But basically, he would just like play music he was into and listen to music we were into, and we play songs together. And he was just the most wonderful guy. And he donated, you know, we paid him something, which, you know, for him was like a pittance, you know, it didn't even matter. And he donated it all to like a gun, an anti-gun violence charity. Mm-hmm. And he was just the coolest
guy. Be cool if it was just
guy.
A gun violence charity, not anti-gun violence. That would be cooler.
It would be less cool. It would be more rock and roll, yeah. But it would be less cool. Anyway, I was just so impressed by him. And then, you know, years later, I came to London to play, you know, this little, I've never had a fan base in Europe. I've never been able to tour there. I went and played like a one-off in London and I called him just to see if he wanted to have tea. I hadn't seen him in years. I didn't even know if he'd remember me. And he's like, oh, would it be okay if I came down and played some mandolin? I'm like, oh no, you don't have to do it. Like that's really, and he just like comes to this show. There's like 50 people in this basement and he insisted and he came down and he
that's
played
so cool.
Like he's the coolest guy on earth. I can't
that's
say
great.
Enough.
That's
about,
just fucking
he's
great
awesome.
Story.
And
it's
he's
nice to
he's
hear.
Just a great he loves music more than anything. And that's the thing. Like, there are people who are into their legacy or into how they're remembered. He doesn't give a damn. He just wants to play good music and listen to good music. That's all he fucking cares about. He's amazing.
Awesome, fucking awesome. And then and also you have a few other, like, is it Plover, Mutual Admiration Society, several other, you put out some solo records. You've kept yourself busy even outside of T2WS or Toad, however you want to call it. So it's nice.
You're gonna make that stick, you know.
T2WS. I try my best. So it's great that you're also that kind of person. You just want to keep putting out music, which is a beautiful thing. And then the last thing is I read you're an ultimate Frisbee fan and somewhat player. So was I. I challenge us. We should play a game, all four of us, next time you're in New York, because I can do the hammer throw and the forehand and the backhand, but you're ambidextrous, so that might make you a little bit more formidable.
How did you find that out?
Don't worry about how I find things out, Glenn, all right?
I can't throw. I'm so bad at that, but I can do. I can throw with either hand, so I'm a little bit dangerous that way. I stopped playing just because I love running, and running kind of keeps me sane. And everybody I was playing with, it was in their 40s, and they were all like tearing their ACLs, having knee replacements, and I was just like, I can't afford that.
So, all right, let's do the first, then we'll do the plugs, and we'll wrap this up.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
Okay.
The name of the show is Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, the SDR show. We ask every guest since the donut time their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, meaning the first concert you went to on your own volition, and hopefully it's someone we know and not some band we never heard of.
It was, as far as I remember, Men at Work at the
Campbell I love
in
that.
Santa Barbara. Mental as Anything, the opening band.
That's so cool. I love Men at Work. I tried to get him, Colin, on the show a couple times. He would come to New York and do acoustic sets, but it never happened. But that would I love him. And then the first drug you ever did after pot, unless the pot wasn't the first drug you ever did, or pot is the worst drug you ever did.
Mushrooms.
Did you love it?
I did. I think hallucinogens are really useful.
I get that vibe from you, sir, for sure.
Can't live there, but it's really great to let your mind do something other than, being obsessed with your own ego for a minute.
How old were you when you did mushrooms the first time?
I would say first time. And the main thing I remember, actually, I've never said this publicly, the song I Will Not Take These Things for Granted, Standing in the Wind in Open Canyons, was about being there with, my girlfriend at the time, but later wife. It's called Lizard's Mouth up in West Camino Cielo, Santa Barbara, and was standing on these rocks listening to The Maker by Daniel Lanois off his first solo album, Acadie. I had my Discman, was listening to Daniel Lanois, standing on these rocks and just watching these clouds being blown down this hillside by this wind. It was one of the most beautiful things I'd ever seen. And once again, just walked away from that going, oh, all my worries are inventions. I'm making shit up to be angry and upset about, and actually everything's in its right place and it's okay that I'm gonna die, and it's such a gift to be alive. And it was like, so that made it into I Will Not Take These Things for Granted.
At least those lyrics make sense. Unlike me fucking around for 30 years trying to figure out what the other song meant. And then lastly, the first time you had sex.
First time I had sex was actually in my parents' garage. They don't know this until now. I was 16. She was 20. She was this awesome punk rock chick. There you go.
She had to be awesome if you were 16. She was 20. That's awesome.
It was. It was fun.
Great. I'd love to hear it.
It was brand new. And entirely unexpected. So now my parents know that I lost my virginity in
their garage. All right, yes. Fantastic. So thank you so much for doing this. We're going to do the plugs around the room. The new album is called Starting Now, which is out now, the ninth album of Toad the Wet Sprocket, at Toad the Wet Sprocket on Instagram and toadthewetsprocket.com. I'm sure it wasn't hard to get those as URLs or as IG social media names. But anything else you want to plug before we wrap it up?
No, just give the new album a new listen. We're happy with it. We're proud of it. And if you can see us, we're going to be on tour for the next couple of months. And
are you coming to New York?
See you out there. We are. We're going to be at, I'm forgetting the exact date, but we're at City Winery.
Oh, great. That's a great new venue on the west side. It's awesome. James, your plugs?
The James Madden on the Instagrams, the Commissioner Comedy Podcast, Comedy Etiquette, all that. New podcast dropping this fall with my boy Shuli, formerly of The Stern Show. Thanks for coming out. A podcast about bombing. Comedians come on and talk about bombing and bad early jokes. And the Check Spot is dropping in November. Artwork got approved. It's dropping, baby. Me answering questions from drunks while they pay their bills at a comedy show. Touchdown, baby.
Just make sure those questions aren't Glenn on day six of a 7-day bender, because they'll be depressing.
Oh, I want them. Glenn, everything you did has made me a better person. God bless
Shannon,
you.
Shannon, your plugs?
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting people like comedians, musicians, porn stars, reality TV stars come on and tell their personal experiences with bad dates, street fights they've been in, and experiences with the paranormal.
Okay, we asked this at the end of every episode. I used to be, I had a perfect track record for like 6 weeks in a row, but I've been fucking up lately. Don't give us any indication of your answer, Glenn, but does Glenn believe in ghosts? I'm saying unequivocally yes.
This is Leia.
Yes, Shannon?
I am slightly undecided, actually, because I feel like it's too obvious of an answer that he believes in ghosts.
He's going to say, I believe in like things we don't understand or bigger thing. That's going to be his answer, but that counts. What do you say, Glenn?
I don't necessarily believe in ghosts. There's any proof.
I win.
Here's what I will say is I believe, and it's the same thing I believe with my own weird spiritual experiences, is I believe I had those experiences. I don't think it proves anything about the outside world. It proves that I had that experience, and that's part of being human. I mean, so I believe that people have had all kinds of incredible and inexplainable experiences, but I don't necessarily, that means there's any empirical evidence for them.
Wow. You know, it's funny. I was 100% like right for like five. And now I have to go against my instincts from this point forward, because I've been fucking up left and right. I'm very upset about it.
I nailed that one, by the way.
You nailed that one, Shannon. Totally.
Nailed it.
All right, follow me ever at I Am Ralph Sutton, my other podcast, Good Sugar, all about health and wellness and my journey to trying to get into better shape, which Jay hates that I use the word journey, but it comes out every single Monday with the founder of Juice Press. We add a song every week to the SDR Show playlist. We're going to add Dual Citizenship because it's my favorite song on the record. We'll add that to the playlist. Glenn Phillips, thank you so much for being a part of the SDR Show.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
Listening to the SDR Show.